Jason, over to you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dr. Bergava, and thanks for having me today. Really appreciate this opportunity, and it's nice to see so many people here. And I would think that perhaps some of you are my patients, and it's great to see you outside of the sort of the clinical setting for a more informal talk. You can hear me, right, Dr. Bergava?
Yes, that's good.
I always find that comment about me looking young kind of amusing, but I'll take it. I'll take it as a compliment and move on. So let me just share my screen.
Sure.
Okay. So I was told that this is a talk that should be directed towards patients, and that's what I've done here. So recognizing that everyone has a different sort of level of knowledge about medicine and rheumatology and things like that. So I apologize in advance if you already know this, but hopefully you'll learn a little bit of something about rheumatology. So my talk is that, you've been referred to rheumatology. And as a patient, your first response almost invariably is going to be, wait, what's rheumatology? And you might have an expression that looks kind of like this. So we're going to talk a little bit about rheumatology. And today we'll go over some truths or myths, so true or false. We'll talk about terminology. We'll talk a little bit about our virtual clinic and how you can get the most out of your appointment. And then we'll end with some concluding remarks and, of course, time for questions. So as Dr. Bergava has already mentioned, I went to school at University of Toronto initially, followed by going to Calgary for med school, Edmonton for residency, McMaster for fellowship, and then back to University of Toronto for fellowship. And now the newest development and the most exciting one is over to you guys at Northumberland Hills. So thank you for having me. So let's go on with some truths or myths. So we're going to go over six topics. Number one, arthritis is a symptom, not a diagnosis. Is that true or is that not true? Number two, arthritis is something that happens because we get older. True or not? Three, rheumatologists are doctors who specialize in seeing older patients with sore joints and are trained in chronic pain management. Number four, natural remedies are better than prescription medications. Number five, my rheumatologic medications can be taken only when I have symptoms. And number six, lab tests are the best way to diagnose a rheumatologic disease. So we're going to go through some of these topics. The first one is arthritis is a symptom, not a diagnosis. So arthritis, the term means joint inflammation, and it's nonspecific. So it's just like when you say, I have a cough, or I'm tired, or my stomach hurts. And all of these symptoms can have so many different causes. And arthritis is just the same thing. So someone with arthralgia, meaning joint pain, or arthritis, meaning joint inflammation, it's simply a symptom. And when someone has arthritis, they must actually have the cause of that arthritis determined, because arthritis is not a diagnosis and only a symptom. So arthritis is a symptom, not a diagnosis. This happens to be true. So the next one is arthritis is something that happens because we get older. So there's a form of arthritis called osteoarthritis. We call it OA. It's a form of arthritis that occurs in older patients. Usually it's when you're 60s or upwards, but it can be in their 50s. And it's due to the wear and tear of joints and loss of cartilage. Some people refer to this as bone on bone. It's quite common, but it's not normal per se. It's not normal to have osteoarthritis. Now, osteoarthritis is something that can happen when we age, but there are many causes, many other causes of arthritis, and many of them can occur at a very young age, from the very start of your life up until your 50s. So there are such things as pediatric rheumatologists, which are the people that I worked with at SickKids, and they're pediatricians, meaning that they see children with arthritis, and of course they don't have it because of wear and tear. They have it because of an immune system problem. So this is osteoarthritis. This is a normal joint. You've got cartilage. You've got a normal joint space here between the two bones. You've got joint fluid here, which is not depicted in this picture. But as you get osteoarthritis, you get loss of the cartilage. The joint space narrows. You start to get this bone-on-bone phenomenon, and that causes significant pain and local inflammation. So the statement of arthritis is something that happens because we get older is not exactly true, because it's generalizing osteoarthritis to all forms of arthritis. And so OA can happen in older age, but other types of arthritis or autoimmune disease are unrelated to age and can happen at any time, including at my age. So this is a false statement. The third one is rheumatologists are doctors who specialize in seeing older patients with sore joints and are trained in chronic pain management. And so we do see many older patients with sore joints due to osteoarthritis. And many of my patients, I would say, are in their older ages, meaning 50 and above. We also see many other types of arthritis, which can have different ages of onset. Some patients are in their 20s. And generally speaking, half of a rheumatologist's patient sort of case lists are those who are less than 50. Rheumatologists are not pain doctors, and so we don't actually treat pain as the primary problem. Many patients with inflammation can have pain, and of course, our goal is to treat the inflammation. The point of doing that is to prevent joint or organ damage. We want to preserve and maintain function of joints and organs, and of course, in that process, minimize pain as well. Now, that being said, pain is not always inflammation. Many patients with pain do not actually have inflammation. And so because someone can have pain doesn't mean they have an inflammatory problem. So patients with chronic pain disorders, such as fibromyalgia, they can have pain, but this is not an inflammatory disease. It's not a rheumatologic condition. And so it's not something that a rheumatologist effectively can help with. Specifically for fibromyalgia, it can have many causes, but it is not known to be an autoimmune condition. And many of you would have heard of fibromyalgia. These are the various symptoms of fibromyalgia. It's a real condition, real disease, very disabling, can be very problematic, but is not an inflammatory condition. Some inflammatory diseases, on the other hand, are painless. So, for example, someone with temporal arteritis or vasculitis, these are abbreviations for long words, they get loss of vision, so they can actually go blind. And these people have an autoimmune disease, and yet they don't have any pain. Someone with lupus can have rashes, they can have kidney damage, they can have bleeding from the lungs, and yet they may not have much in the way of joint pain. So on and so forth with a number of other examples. So rheumatologists treat inflammation, and it could be systemic or local. So what does that mean? Systemic means that it's due to your immune system being overactive. Your immune system is out of check, the brakes are off, and it's hitting a variety of organs, some of which may include your joints. Examples would include rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, or vasculitis. Local inflammation happens due to local mechanical factors that cause inflammation, but only at that site. So for example, osteoarthritis, if you have bursitis on the side of your hip, and some of my patients have had injections on the side of their hips. And that's because of local inflammation at that site. It's not because they have an immune system disease. It's because of local irritation causing local inflammation. And this can be treated with sort of more local treatments. So rheumatologists are doctors who specialize in seeing older patients with sore joints and trained in chronic pain management. That's the statement. So we are trained in managing inflammatory diseases. Sometimes it can be painful, not always. And sometimes our patients, they are older individuals with sore joints. But this would be a generalized statement, and so therefore, this is actually false. So So the next one is natural remedies are better than prescription medications. I guess it depends on what we mean by better. We often hear that natural remedies are safe, and they usually are. I would agree with that. But usually they're not very effective in autoimmune diseases. So if you have an autoimmune disease, you generally will require medication to induce remission. What do I mean by induce remission? It means to control the symptoms to a minimal or absent level, meaning to get you to a point to before you had the disease. And in order to do that, prescription medications generally are necessary. Natural remedies and herbal supplements are usually not enough to do that. When I talk about natural remedies, what are we really talking about? So, you know, there could be many different types of vitamins, but here I'm just going to go back. I would say that natural remedies can be helpful as an adjunctive treatment, meaning on top of the prescription medications. What do I mean by natural remedies? So, number one, exercise. Always a good idea to keep active, to keep moving. Joints are made to be moved. Muscles are made to be used. And so we often will advise that patients have at least 30 minutes of walking outside 3 times a week as a starter. Some people who can't walk because of severe pain in their, let's say, their hips or their knees, benefit significantly from going to your local swimming pool and doing Aquafit exercises. So that's exercise. The second thing is dietary changes. Often we hear of things like inflammatory foods, non-inflammatory diets. The evidence of this is not very strong, but personally, I do believe that there may be some contributing aspect to it, and I think it's relatively low risk. So the foods that are thought to cause inflammation for some people, not all, include things like gluten, processed meat, refined sugars and fast foods, fried foods, dairy. Some of these things can worsen symptoms in some people. And when they cut it out, it actually improves their joint pain. That's the trial of cutting out inflammatory foods. And we can go into that more detail later. But the fourth thing is stress management. So if we live in sort of the current day and age, every one of us is probably a bit too stressed. If you're working, maybe you're stressed from working. If you're retired, maybe you're stressed from family stuff or financial stuff. But we all have stress in our lives, and stress is certainly something that worsens inflammation and pain. The fifth is related to the fourth, and that's optimization of sleep. Someone who doesn't sleep enough and someone who doesn't sleep with a reasonable quality of sleep is going to have more inflammation, and their immune system is going to suffer. Does that mean that they're automatically going to get lupus? No. But if you have lupus, if you have rheumatoid, you're not sleeping well, if you're not managing your stress, it's not going to help. It would probably make things worse. There are some things like glucosamine and chondroitin, which are thought of as normal components of joints. And sometimes people ask whether it's useful to take them. There are no controlled studies that consistently show that these things are helpful. Some people still take them, and that's fine. They are relatively harmless, but it's very difficult to say that they're actually useful. What I would say is useful would be perhaps the first five things here. So natural remedies are better than prescription medications. The summary statement is they're generally ineffective in restoring your immune system, which is what needs to happen in an autoimmune disease. So in this case, I would say the statement is false. Okay, so my rheumatologic medication should be taken only when I have symptoms. So with rheumatologic conditions, and by that I'm talking about immune system diseases, so systemic immune system diseases, as long as you have the disease, you need the medication. So it's kind of like HIV or diabetes or hypertension or depression. If you have these conditions, you have hypertension, you need to take the medication, not only when your blood pressure is high, because most of the time it's going to be high. So medications usually induce remission. You end up with no symptoms or hopefully less symptoms. If you stop the medication, the disease will reappear. That's the concern. And after it reappears, it may be more difficult to control. And so that's why we like to, that's why we prefer to keep patients on the same medications, even when they've started to feel better, because maintenance is key. So this statement is false. Lab tests are the best way to diagnose a rheumatologic disease. I think this is the last true or false statement. It's hard to do a poll here, but it would be interesting to see what people think. But we can discuss this later. Now, lab tests are often the best way to diagnose disease. You can't diagnose diabetes without a lab test, and you have to test your blood sugars. You have to do an MRI or CT scan to figure out if you have cancer. You can't figure it out any other way. You also can't prove that someone has COVID unless you do PCR, right? So the point here is lab tests are very important. Now, that's actually not true for autoimmune disease. So the diagnosis of a rheumatologic or an autoimmune disease requires a very detailed and thorough assessment of a number of things, including your symptoms, which is basically what you tell me, your physical exam, which is what we find when we look at your joints and your skin and all of that. And the lab tests really only constitute maybe 20% of the actual diagnosis. And so, something we hear quite often is that, the family doctor did some tests and you've been tested positive for lupus, or there was something showing rheumatoid arthritis in your tests. Now, this statement, it can't possibly be true, because you cannot test positive for lupus or rheumatoid in a technical sense. You can have findings on your lab tests that make up part of the puzzle for rheumatoid or lupus, but there is no one piece of the puzzle that can tell you definitively you have any one disease. So hopefully that's kind of clear. This is basically a puzzle of the cat. Now, the point of what we try to do is to collect all of the pieces of the puzzle and figure out what it is we're dealing with. So the analogy is that if you start with this piece, you have a little bit of blue, you have a little bit of gray, you really have no idea what puzzle you're going to end up with. But if you have the piece in the middle, you have the eyes and the nose, you have the actual face of the cat, you have a pretty good idea of what the end product is going to be. But just because you have the middle piece doesn't mean that you can 100% say that, okay, the end result is going to be a cat, because maybe the end result is a fox or something else. And so you need all of the pieces of the puzzle. Sometimes those pieces are lab tests, sometimes those pieces are, your symptoms. And so that's why we do a fairly thorough assessment. All right. So lab tests can be helpful, but never used in isolation to diagnose rheumatologic disease. So we've gone over some truths or myths. That's actually half of the talk. We'll just go over a quick note on terminology. So there are a lot of long words that sound similar. OP, is it OP or is it OA? Was it RA or OA? I think my grandpa had some arthritis, wasn't sure if it was OA or RA. Maybe it was OP, we don't remember. Now I'm going to clarify these terms. Okay, so the first one's OP. So OP is osteoporosis. This is referring to reduced bone density. There's nothing, absolutely nothing to do with arthritis. And this is often due to aging and menopause. And as the bones get more brittle, they get less dense, it can result in fractures and your bones can break, even with minimal trauma. The second term is OA. OA is osteoarthritis. We've kind of already talked about it. And it's arthritis. It results from wear and tear of joints. It usually happens in older patients. The third term, rheumatoid arthritis, not to be confused with osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, RA, is an autoimmune disease, meaning that your immune system is the problem, and it leads to your immune system attacking your joints. It can occur at any age, including in your childhood. So that's why it's important to differentiate between OA and RA. One is an immune system problem. The other one is a factor of many things, including age. And then OP is not even arthritis at all. So hopefully that's clear. Now, the virtual clinic, as Dr. Bergava had sort of already alluded to, we run the virtual clinic on Thursday afternoons. We usually see about 4 to 6 patients per week. It's not a lot, but essentially patients come into clinic in the hospital. I interview the patient. I ask them lots of questions. Many of these questions may seem totally random and irrelevant, but we do that because, the more information we have, the better. And then Rebecca, our nurse, reviews the physical exam, and she's learned how to examine joints. And many of you will know Rebecca, and I'm sure you've known Rebecca for far longer than I have. And she's done a great job in helping us with physical exam. And then we all review the labs together. We discuss the diagnosis and the treatment. Often the first time I meet a patient, we don't come up with a diagnosis. And that's totally normal because we need to collect more pieces of the puzzle. And often by the second visit, we have most, if not all, of the pieces of the puzzle, and we can proceed with treatment. The medications and the labs are ordered online through the EMR. And so the advent of Epic at the hospital has been very helpful because I can be anywhere and order what patients need electronically. And so we do this through OTN, as many of you will know. As many of you will recognize, this is an actual portrait of Rebecca because she does many things. She does neurology, she does rheumatology, she's soon to do genetics. She's I feel like she's almost a doctor, but she's sort of a super nurse at the clinic. And so far, we've seen 72 patients, 72 new patients. Now, of course, these 72 people some of them have been seen multiple times. We haven't seen that many people who've ended up having osteoarthritis. We've actually made 22 new diagnoses of rheumatoid arthritis, and they are now on appropriate treatment. Some of these people have crystal disease like gout and things like that. And then there are 40 other conditions within the 72 people that I've seen. That fall within, other types of diagnoses that are not osteoarthritis and not rheumatoid arthritis and it's not gout. So the last thing I'll talk about in this virtual clinic model is feedback. So, we often don't have a lot of time in clinic to talk about it. But we're always open, at least I'm always open to patients providing me or Rebecca or someone in the clinic with feedback in terms of how the clinic is running, what they think of our service, and whether there's anything that we can do to make the experience better, given sort of the limitations that we would reasonably have. But we're always happy to listen to what, patients' perspectives are and what we can do to help patients, because that's really ultimately why we're here. So if you are a patient of the clinic, and hopefully you're not, but if you are, what are my tips for getting the most out of your appointment? So the first thing is taking ownership over your health issues, knowing your diagnosis, keeping track of your medication lists and your condition, and something that rhymes with BYOB, but doesn't really, it's BYOQ. I'm going to explain what this means in just a second. So it's important to have a clear understanding of your diagnosis and your current clinical status. So a family member, your family doctor, your best friend, your neighbor, could ask you what your diagnosis is, and you should be able to tell them, my diagnosis is X. And you should be able to also know your current clinical status, meaning this is my diagnosis, and is my disease active right now? Is it under control? So you should be able to tell your neighbor, my diagnosis is rheumatoid arthritis, and currently I'm under control. So that is sort of, really important to know. And I think many of my patients know this. It's important in general, not just for me, but in general, to know the names of your specialists. You may be seeing many specialists, what their area of practice is, and what diagnosis they gave you. So when you see a new doctor, you can tell them, I've been seeing Dr. so-and-so, they are an endocrinologist, and they manage my diabetes. And they put me on these medications, you should be able to list them. And many patients can have many medications, and these medications have long names, and they're not easy to learn. It took me a long time to learn them. But that's, hundreds of medications. Usually patients have anywhere between, 2 to 10 or something like that. But it's important to know, what it is you take and why you take them. And so it's probably worth, trying to get around those long names. If you don't know, ask your doctor. Usually I think people are quite happy to explain these things. Now, what's BYOQ? So Q is questions. We're not bringing anything. So not BYOB, but BYO3Q. So three well thought out questions. I'm always happy. If you're my patient, I'm always happy to answer your questions. Always helpful if you look them up at home first. So for example, your question may be, my family doctor did a test and it's a double-strand DNA, dsDNA is positive, what is it? So, I'm okay with people looking it up at home. I'm all for people coming to me and say, I looked it up and it seems to be related to lupus. Can you tell me more? So that's a really good question to bring up in clinic. And there's always time in clinic to answer a few questions. On another note, it's important for you to keep track. So having something like a health journal is really good. And in your health journal, you would include things like various dates you saw your doctor, the symptoms that you had, when did you have those symptoms, and the specialists, their names, their diagnosis and management plans for you, things that we just kind of mentioned, medications you're actively taking. Record it all. Right, because I record it. Every doctor records it in their EMR, but it's always best when the patient themselves also have a good record of what's actually going on with them. Because sometimes the electronic system fails, right? So it's always good to have your own record. What are my concluding remarks? I've got 8 of them. So 1, arthritis is a symptom, not a diagnosis. 2. Osteoarthritis is wear and tear of the joints in older patients, leading to local inflammation. But it's only one of the many causes of arthritis. 3, arthritis caused by wear and tear, meaning by osteoarthritis, is symptomatically treated, meaning we largely treat the symptoms. Unfortunately, there is nothing we can do to reverse the osteoarthritis. That's different for autoimmune disease, because you'll see with 4, arthritis caused by autoimmune disease is treated with immune modulating medication. Not only is this going to treat symptoms, this is actually going to treat the disease itself. 5, if your arthritis is caused by autoimmune disease, natural methods unfortunately are not going to work. 6, joint pain is one of the many reasons why you may be referred to a rheumatologist. So your family doctor might refer you to a rheumatologist and you might not have any joint pain, but what I'm trying to, clarify is that there may be many reasons why you might be referred to a rheumatologist. And if it's not joint pain, maybe your family doctor thinks you may have an immune system problem. And those things are generally quite few and far in between. They are fairly rare. So generally speaking, it's unlikely to happen to you. Number seven, we talked about this, document your visits, keep track of your condition, keep a journal if you don't already have one. Knowledge and organizations, knowledge of your own condition, organization, so we're talking about documenting in a journal or having a binder, organization gives you power over your disease. So this allows us to kind of, you know, be a more effective team when both the doctor and the patient is on top of what's going on. Number eight is a blank line. I don't have a number eight. And it's really an invitation for you to perhaps think about what we've talked about and maybe come up with a bottom line for yourself if it hasn't already been covered. So that's really all I have for today. Happy to take any questions. I personally haven't been to Coburg, but having seen this picture, kind of looks like Miami Beach here. I would love to visit. It seems like a very beautiful town, especially classical architecture of the main town hall is very beautiful, and all of the patients I've seen so far have been wonderful. So thank you for listening, and I'm happy to take any questions. I think we're on mute.
Thank you, Jason. That was phenomenal. You packed it up very well in terms of true and false, and answered some of the questions that had come online. But let's start with the questions. The first two questions are from Carlos. Carlos's claim to fame is also that he has attended, I believe, all PACE sessions since they started day one 5 years ago. So, Carlos, your question is, how do you diagnose osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis? So, Jason, that is the first one. And the second one is, how to get to join the virtual clinic? With essentially, you can share both. How do people get to see you if they need to see you?
Yeah, so the second question is far simpler, so I'm going to go with that. I mean, essentially, if your family doctor thinks that you have a rheumatologic problem, then they would send a referral to me and I would see you in the clinic. Things that may be related to rheumatology would be, of course, joint pain. But it may be a variety of other symptoms as well. So the best way would be to talk to your family doctor about the symptoms that bother you. And your family doctor will sort of decide whether or not it's appropriate to refer you to me. The second question of how to diagnose osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis is not as straightforward, but I would say that, you know, the primary task of a rheumatologist when they see a patient with joint pain, and of course that's many, many people, right, is determining whether or not the joint pain is from wear and tear or whether the joint pain is from an immune system disease. Now, the way to determine that is with an interview. We ask lots of questions. There are certain parts of your symptoms that may be more suggestive of wear and tear versus that of immune system disease. Your physical exam, so what Rebecca finds when she examines your hands and things like that. And of course, the lab tests. So those are, in general, the things that we look at. It kind of is alluding to the puzzle of the cat that we talked about. But, you know, you touch on a good point. That is essentially the primary task of what we try to do. And, you know, that's why we go through years of fellowship, is to understand those factors that differentiate these diseases.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the next one is from Deborah. Deborah is asking, can someone working with a rheumatologist in another area far away from Coburg can migrate to your clinic for ongoing management? So essentially the question is, do you diagnose and treat and release, or do you does a rheumatologist chronically follow patients in a virtual clinic?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Thank you, Deborah. Nice to meet you. So, so usually if the condition is deemed to be sort of more wear and tear or local, usually we don't follow them for very long. Usually, for example, to give you an example, if someone has hip bursitis and they need an injection, we would arrange the injection and they would do physiotherapy. That can generally be followed by the family doctor. There are conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and vasculitis, those conditions that involve the immune system and therefore require immune suppression medication. That is something that we generally like to follow. So if there are people that live in far-flung areas or somewhere else, they're already seeing a rheumatologist and that rheumatologist is retiring, and this has happened many times over the past couple of months, you know, I'm always happy to see them for ongoing care. But of course, you know, I think if they already have someone and they've known that specialist for a long time, I would generally advise that they stick with that person because they, you know, they would have a better understanding of their condition.
Thank you. The next one is Bill Provacki. He has also advised us on PACE topics, amongst other things he's done for the hospital as a volunteer. So Bill's question is, virtual versus in-person, how have patients adapted to the new model? And I would add to that question, how have you felt as a physician? You are in downtown Toronto. You could keep yourself busy with just seeing folks here, but you do this sort of an outreach. How? What's your opinion? So what do patients think and what do you think of this virtual medicine?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thanks, Bill. That's a great point. How have patients adapted to this new process? I have absolutely no idea because, you know, I can't really speak for the patients, but I hope that they've found this useful. I hope that, you know, this has been helpful for them. I think we should actually open it up to a couple of patients to comment on how this has been for them. But for me as a healthcare provider, you know, certainly it has been challenging because there are certain specialties in medicine where they rely very heavily on labs. We kind of talked about this. And for example, cardiology, they would do echocardiograms. Infectious diseases, they need to do blood cultures. Endocrinology, you need to measure blood sugars. Rheumatology is one of the few specialties that is very dependent on actual interviewing and physical exam. So you can't really be diagnosed with anything if you're not examined by someone. And so initially that was a challenge because, you know, I can't examine them. But I think Rebecca's done a great job in learning how to do that. And she did that because she's actually made the trip down to Toronto a number of times where we've done physical exams together, and she's learned how to do that. And so, you know, it has been a bit of an adaptation, as you pointed out, but I think it's been working out quite well because I don't think I could do this if I had to commute there every week. I think it's helpful for patients as well.
Thank you. The next one is Catherine. Catherine Tilling asks, if you are diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that causes a different type of arthritis, do you work in conjunction with the other specialist managing that disease?
Yeah, so thanks for the question, Catherine. It's a great question. It depends on what it is, right? So some people with psoriasis can have arthritis. We call it psoriatic arthritis. And so I would be managing the arthritis. If the psoriasis gets really bad, then they might also see a dermatologist. Some people with lupus can have arthritis. So they can also have kidney damage. And so in that case, they would see a nephrologist. So it totally depends on what they have.
Great. Thank you. The next one is from Jennifer, and you know Jennifer, Jason. So this is a question also that came from the internet in when people registered. The question is, really, my hands are changing, or my mother's hands or father's hands are changing. The knuckles are looking knobbier, and they may be in pain, may not be in pain. Is this a problem? Was the question from the internet. But Jennifer's question is really, they are, if the joints are misshapen, is this typical of RO or RA or OA? Are there ways to minimize it? Should they be seen? Should it just be attributed to age, and then say this is just as we get older, our hands become different?
Yeah, so again, another great question. Thank you, Christina. So, oh, okay, you actually named the person that you're referring to. So, oh no, it's Jennifer, actually.
Yes, yeah, it's the Jennifer. Question before. Yes.
Sorry, Jennifer. So, I think you should never just assume that it's due to age. I would say that on balance, it's more likely to be due to age, because inflammatory diseases are very uncommon and they're fairly rare. So if you find that your hands are getting a bit misshapen, or your grandmother's hands, more likely than not, it's due to age. But, you know, if it's causing her problems, I would certainly have it evaluated because of the small chance that it may be due to an inflammatory disease. Now, I'm sure this is a typo, but when you say RO, I think you mean RA. And this is why we explain those various terms, because there's so many abbreviations here. So when you say the hands are misshapen, the way that they're misshapen is different in different diseases, right? And when you say knuckles, most people are referring to these are knuckles. But some people call these knuckles. I mean, they're not really, but it, you know, the specific joint also tells us, you know, whether it could be wear and tear, or whether it's inflammatory. So I guess the bottom line is, if you're concerned, make those concerns heard with your family doctor. That'd be the good first step.
Great, thank you. The next one is a comment from Christina. Christina is sharing that her husband is a patient of Dr. Ann. The teamwork, both between Rebecca examining and informing Dr. Ann of her findings, the blood work being done, talking to the patient works well. They're still trying to find out the medication that will help, and wants to thank you for doing what you do, Jason. So I'll also bring up the other questions that have come through email. One is, what is, like you had touched on, anti-inflammatory diet, but is there anything that you would say people should eat that helps prevent arthritis, osteoarthritis, or any other type of arthritis? Is a magic diet, is there something they should not eat, like people should not smoke or do something? What are the dietary recommendations?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about this earlier on, and I hope that might have answered the question. I generally recommend a Mediterranean diet that's rich in fruit and vegetables. Essentially, a plant-based diet is usually the way to go. I like to tell people to stay away from refined sugars, processed foods, anything, food that comes in a box, food that you put in a box, and by that I'm referring to your microwave. There are certain things that some people find inflammatory. So, for example, red meat, soy, dairy, nuts, and gluten. Some people do experience quite a bit of benefit when they go off gluten, even if they are technically not celiac. So these are all things that you can try. I usually tell people to try cutting out these things one at a time for 2 weeks and see if it makes any difference. You don't want to cut all of it out all at the same time, because then you won't know what's helping and what's not. And it's also very difficult to cut out all of these things at the same time, because you know you'll know that gluten is in a lot of foods, for example.
Right.
So, yeah.
But the next one was, we talked about natural remedies. They're not necessarily that effective. They may be safe. But specifically, calcium has been equated with bone health and, mainly in osteoporosis, but otherwise also people say calcium makes bones stronger. Is it just osteoporosis where it makes it, or is there any other value of calcium or any harm in calcium?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so calcium is something that, it, of course, gets incorporated into bone. And so for people who have a normal intake of calcium, so for example, if you consume calcium on a regular basis, either through yogurt or dairy products like milk, or if you have the odd ice cream once in a while, now ice cream is bad because of fine sugars, but it has calcium. Now, if you have yogurt, for example, on a daily basis or every other day, you have a normal intake of calcium, there generally isn't much of an added benefit of taking supplemental calcium. Now, people who have normal dietary calcium, let's say they drink milk every day, and they take extra calcium, there are some experts that think that may actually lead to too much calcium. And the calcium actually builds up in the blood vessels and causes atherosclerosis, which is the cause behind heart attacks and strokes. So the point is, if you have normal, regular dietary calcium intake, you don't need to take extra calcium.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad you said covered the coronary disease point of view, because we see that in our practice when people ask, I should be taking calcium because my bones are weak. And we, from heart disease point of view, we shouldn't be. And so the next one is, pertains to if you exercise and maybe if you exercise, is there anything like exercising too much? People say, runners get early arthritis. There are certain sports injury. One is injury related, but just where does this all stand? Can you hurt yourself by doing something that otherwise is considered to be a great lifestyle? Like, we'll just take the example of running.
Yeah. So I would say that runners generally do have an earlier onset of osteoarthritis. If you've been running since you were 18 or, 15 years old for, 40 years, probably you're going to do more damage to the cartilage in your knees. We don't even need to do an MRI to prove that. Now, that being said, someone who runs is also going to develop a lot more of the muscular support around the knees. And that would actually help prevent osteoarthritis, or at least reduce the pain that's associated with osteoarthritis. And so can you overdo it? Yes, you can overdo it if you're overdoing it for a very long time. If you imagine a sumo wrestler who's maybe 400 pounds, they are going to have osteoarthritis because of the significant weight on their joints. The joints are not designed to bear that kind of weight. And so what I would suggest is moderate exercise to a point where it's not hurting you, but it's always good to keep the joints moving. It's always good to develop the muscles around the joint because the muscles stabilize the joint. And patients who do physiotherapy for the muscles in their thighs and in their lower legs actually experience reduced pain in the knees, in the knee joint.
Nice. Thank you. The next one was, at times people try to sell great shoes to prevent, they say bad shoes lead to arthritis because you're off balance. Do shoes matter?
Yeah, so shoes matter. And when we go through training, they always teach us to look at shoes. Now, we're not experts at shoes, and I'm not going to comment on your style of footwear. But there are shoes that are not good for your feet, and there are shoes that are good for your feet. And so we're generally talking about the arch support and where the weight is distributed. Generally, a good idea to have orthotics in your shoes and wear shoes that are ergonomic. If you're on flats all the time, not good for your feet. And that actually will translate to your knees as well, and also to your hips.
So is flat feet a rheumatologic problem, or is it, what is flat feet?
So flat feet essentially is where the arch of the foot is flat, fairly obvious. Now, it's not a rheumatologic condition in the sense that, you know, you don't have flat feet because your immune system is diseased, but that could have many different causes. One may be you simply may be born with flat feet, or it may be a reflection of your footwear. So if you do have flat feet, it's always a good idea to have arch support and to have custom orthotics done for you, which is not something that I do, but I would recommend that people do that.
Great. Thank you. And before we go back to the chat, and I know that we are at 6:30, there was one more which was thought to be interesting, was what is the role of cannabis? Because there are different forms of cannabis ointments people use for things. And should I be using cannabis for hand arthritis or whatever arthritis one has? That was the question.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that. So I don't think that there are very strong trials that consistently support cannabis. But that being said, put it this way, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, right? So, you know, we don't have a lot of evidence for it, but it doesn't mean it doesn't work. When people come to me and they say they take a little bit of cannabis, it helps a lot, I believe them. And as long as they're not taking, you know, too much cannabis, or cannabis to the point where they're getting addicted to it, I would certainly support that. I would certainly support that over getting, you know, addicted to things like opioids, which over the long term don't help for the pain and certainly don't help the disease process. And James is saying cannabis oil, you know, if it doesn't help with the pain, at least it can help you sleep. And the more sleep you get, the more quality sleep you get, the less pain you're going to have. So that's also a good point.
Great. And James, you have your hand up. Maybe you want to directly ask a question or you have a comment.
Miigwech, thank you.
Yeah.
Doctor, yeah. Jason, I appreciate your comment on youth arthritis. I know of a young girl, I think she was 3 or 4 when she was diagnosed, and I believe she's about 8 now, doing better, but she had it really young. She was diagnosed, but she's hopefully on the mend. And it's good to see a specialist in Northumberland as yourself. A lot of residents have to go up to Peterborough and such, but cortisone treatment, I've been on that for a while now. I imagine quite a few have, just to help ease the pain, especially when you're sleeping. I'm a side sleeper, they call it, I guess. And you wake up through the night, your shoulders are just aching like crazy. But I've had about 5 or 6 doses over the years now of cortisone. But an interesting thing, I think I put it in email. I met a doctor, and their clinic is called iScope in Mississauga. And the treatment, what they do is treat pain. And so I'm scheduled for an appointment in a couple of weeks. And what they do, they x-ray and they pinpoint the nerve and the tendon, maybe, possibly. And then they'll insert a laser and kill that nerve just to take away the pain, right? They don't cure arthritis, but at least it helps the pain procedure until you actually can get some medical treatment for arthritis. But their whole goal is to help people get off of painkillers and such until they actually get a good treatment, I guess. So I just wanted to share that with the groups. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. And then we covered that. And the next are 2 comments. But before we go to comments, does starting or increasing the use of collagen help joints?
Yeah. So first, I'll just say thanks for sharing that, James. You know, the it's always good to sort of get off the opioid medications. You know, the pain may not even be from arthritis. So it's that's something important to know, right? So as to the other question, does collagen help joints? We talked about this in the slide. So glucosamine and chondroitin are components of collagen. Taking those supplements has not been proven to actually help joints. Doesn't hurt. It doesn't cause any harm. Some people might feel benefit from it, and if you do, you can certainly keep taking it. But I have never recommended someone start taking those medications or supplements.
Thank you. So then the next three comments I'll summarize. One is from Dr. Sharma, Anuja Sharma. Thank you for sharing your wisdom in a straightforward and clear way. I appreciate your insights into dietary influence of joint health. Thank you. Bill Pravacki, sharing with everybody that PACE talks often will be recorded and shared. So if people want to hear this again. And then Jennifer Gillard, thank you for a wonderful talk, Dr. Ann. And she's echoing on all from all of us for such a great presentation. And thank you to the audience for an excellent question that you submitted. You also submitted ideas for the next eight talks. Our hope and desire is before the next talk, we'll have all of these next talks scheduled and have a running list. So with that, Jason, any concluding comments? Over to you.
No, I just want to say thank you again for having me at this talk, and thank you for having me as part of the team. It's a privilege.
Thank you, and thank you for doing this. Thank you for taking the time. We know you were traveling until last night. I think our understanding was
actually it was delayed, so I got off this 12-hour flight this afternoon.
Jeez. So we were wondering if your flight really got delayed, how will we manage this? And Jennifer Gillard said, well, then we'll have to figure out what we talk about. But this is a very receptive and supportive audience. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll be in touch. We are back online. So we'll check out pacetalks.com or the NHH website where future talks are listed, but you'll also get emails. So thank you. You take care and have a good night.
Bye now. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Take care.